Introduce two members of my family are with me, two granddaughters, their sisters, and that's Lisa and Linda, standing over here. We actually had our Christmas a little early this year. It was last weekend because their older sister, who's getting ready to graduate from medical school, just got married, so we had a big family affair, and Linda is in A&M getting ready to go to veterinarian school, and Lisa is a medical student too. But anyway, I'm glad to have them with me today. But it is a real delight to be here. Did anybody get to watch the Jay Leno show this week? You know, I had been on his show a couple times before, and it was always nice. He's a real gentleman, and sometimes he allows me to, you know, end of my sentences like some other people don't. So, but it went well, and evidently he got a whole lot of comments. Matter of fact, on my way in, he called me on my phone, and and he wanted to thank me for it. And he said that they got a lot of very favorable responses, and he says he thinks there's a pretty good chance they're just going to replay that program again. But we did get a lot of responses, and it is true. He asked very similar questions that other ask in a very negative fashion. Like they ask you a question, and then they quickly cut you off and not allow you to finish your sentence. But at least on that show, we got to explain ourselves. And usually when people understand in a little more depth about the economic policies I've talked about, the monetary policy and the Federal Reserve, and even the foreign policy, and even the principles of liberty and why we should follow the Constitution, people usually nod ahead, you know, that makes sense. You know, it's not that complicated. It's a lot of it is just common sense. And I don't think economics is complicated. I think economics is complicated if you study it in college. They really make it complicated because they're always trying to justify why you need government to tell you what to do with your dollars and how to spend them and how do you invest and everything else. But most people out of common sense, especially with the traditions of America, you know, we were taught generally, you know, if you work hard and save and invest, you can provide for yourself and save yourself a nest egg. But when you have government doing the planning, they think that savings is bad. You're supposed to spend the money and stimulate the economy. You're supposed to have the government spend the money, and then they tax you and interfere with all your choices. So there's a big difference. There's a big difference between the economics of the Keynesians and liberalism, where they take over, versus free market Austrian economics, where the market handles things. People do make voluntary choices. I am convinced that the problems that we face today is that we, many, many years ago, gave up on market principles. And it really got going in the wrong direction during the Depression, because the conclusion of the Depression was that was when they were ushering in the age of Keynesianism. They said that freedom was the fault, free markets were at fault, property rights were at fault, and that stupid gold standard was at fault, and therefore government had to take control. They had to direct the investments and decide what interest rates should be, and they should be spending the money, and they have more of these obligations. And in many ways, we've been slipping ever since then. Some people would argue that's not the case. We've had some pretty good years since the Depression. We've had ups and downs, but pretty good years. But what we have drifted from is prosperity, where prosperity is paid for, versus the superficial prosperity that our country has today, which is built on debt. Our government is really insolvent. They can't pay bills. Tragically, they've taken the Social Security Trust Fund and they removed the word trust, and the fund is no longer there. And they have IOUs in the so-called trust fund, which means to pay out the beneficiaries, they have to tax somebody else or print the money in order to send out the checks, because there's no real welfare. If an insurance company would run their trust funds the way the government has run the Social Security Trust Fund, they don't go to prison, you know, because it's fraud. But I think we lose twice when we go in that direction. First, they undermine the principle of promising to pay out Social Security, or if they just tax you and the government spends it. But what they do with it is harmful. First, taking it is wrong, but the second part is what they do with it. And this is the problem we face today, because many, many decades now, especially since World War II, every year we spend more and more money overseas. We spend it on foreign aid and intervention, propping up dictators, fighting wars that we don't need to be fighting, and they drain these reserve funds. They drain the Social Security, so that money has been spent. So my proposal in the budget I propose is to reverse that in order to try to prop up the funding that now we can't afford, and we don't have the money, is start reversing the expenditures overseas. And that is the reason I've offered a program we would cut $1 trillion the first year. One half of it would come from overseas spending, and that would mean, though, that we as a people would have to change our attitude about what our foreign policy should be. So I've talked a lot about it. I get a lot of criticism for it, but really it's not brand new. It was one time what Republicans advocated, minding our own business and having a strong national defense. Matter of fact, not too long ago, in the year 2000, when Republicans won the White House and the House and the Senate, the foreign policy that George Bush ran on was no more nation building, no more policing of the world. Don't get involved in these internal affairs. So it is popular with the people, but right now, with the proposals being made by our campaign and my efforts, it's just to reinstate what the Constitution says and come back to a little bit of sanity and say, no more wars, no more wars unless you declare them and fight them and win them and get them over with. But this perpetual war is bankrupting our country. So there's a lot of people who say that that'll ruin our national defense. And I disagree with it. I think that our national defense is undermined by bankrupting our country. If most great countries go down, not because they're overtaken by another country, but because of economic crisis. The Soviet system collapsed for economic reasons, and we're really on the verge of that too if we can continue to do this. So this, to me, the amount of money we spend overseas has undermined our national defense. There should be a distinction between military spending and defense spending. And Eisenhower, of course, as a Republican president, as he was leaving office, he warned. He says, be careful. There will be special interests that will always want to spend money in the military, and they will always justify it. There will always be, you know, a desperate reason why we have to do this and be involved. But just recently, this type of foreign policy has led to an additional problem. It's not out of control now, but it contributes to our problem. And that is the problem in Libya. We had an on-again, off-again relationship with Gaddafi. He finally gave up his nuclear weapons, and we started trading with him again. But once he gave up his nuclear weapons, you know what happened to him? They finally got rid of him. Now there's a new government there. Unfortunately, the new government, as bad as Gaddafi was, they might end up worse because they have alliances with the Al-Qaeda. But there were a lot of weapons lost when the fighting was occurring with our efforts through NATO. It wasn't directly, but indirectly we were paying for it. But a lot of weapons disappeared. So I know I just read recently that there is a massive program that the president wants to rearm this new government. So guess what? We're going to be building weapons, but somebody's going to make profits on that. So Eisenhower's warnings were justified. Watch out for the military-industrial complex. We're supposed to defend this country. We're not supposed to be giving arms to certain dictators around the world to secure their power. We pumped in, over the many decades, about $40 billion to prop up to Mubarak in Egypt. But he had a huge army, hundreds of thousands. But it wasn't for defense. Nobody's going to invade his country. He had a huge army. It was usually for him to stay in power, but it cost him all that money. Now that government was finally overthrown, and once again, you know, another military dictatorship is evolving, and they're more radical. They're more likely radical Islamists, and they're way less friendly with Israel. So there's so many unintended consequences, but the most significant for all this activity is it contributes so much to our bankruptcy. Now, the other reason that I talk a lot about the overseas spending is for pure political reasons. And that is, I mean, the foreign policy would be better and all, the world would be safer. But politically, it makes it so much easier to talk about spending overseas than cutting some program here at home. I mean, why should we talk about cutting back on health care here at home when we don't cut all this overseas spending? So I think politically we should bring people together, left or right or independent or what, and say, yes, we know we're in big trouble. We have to cut. Let's cut the overseas spending. That would mean we could immediately bring our troops home, and immediately they would start spending their money here in this country instead of in Korea and Japan and Europe and the Middle East. So that in itself could give us an economic boost just because that money would be spent here rather than overseas. But I'm convinced we'd have a stronger national defense than we have now because we are more threatened by the people who rather resent it that we're in their face and telling them what to do and deciding who the bad guys are and use these drones just at will, any place we want to go. The world is the battlefields now. So they will attack individuals that I'm sure are nasty, violent people. But guess what? They have problems always hitting one person, and first they violate the sovereignty of these nations, but then innocent people get killed. And I keep trying to remind people that even if you say, well, yeah, we still have to go out and we have to do this, think about it in the way of how we would react if somebody was powerful enough to do that to us. I mean, we would highly resent it. I mean, just the idea that they could come in here and lob a missile and decide that there's a renegade and escape from their countries in this country and not deal with us as a nation. So that in itself causes a lot of resentment. But the financial condition of the country isn't only due to the foreign policy. The financial condition and the bankruptcy is due to the excessive spending in this country. And the programs that we have, many of them shouldn't have ever been started. But the ones where the people become so dependent, there's some educational programs, there's medical care programs, there's the Social Security. This is what I'm trying to protect in a period of time where we get our health back and our sensibilities back. So, but you can't do that unless you cut something like overseas and some of these departments that we don't need. I don't see why we should have to have this Department of Education telling you how to run your schools. I'd get rid of the Department of Education. But even then, we wouldn't have enough money to cut that trillion. So what I propose is going back to the funding of 2006. Now, that's not so long ago, and I don't think any of us should be unhappy with the size of the government was in 2006. I thought it was way too big then. So it would be, it is an effort, but nothing like that happens. One person can propose it, one person can move it, one person can encourage and get other people to come along. But ultimately, it's the people that make a difference. For all these years where we have been careless and we have been spending the money, it wasn't because government always just wanted to spend the money. The people more or less endorsed it. They reelected the congressman. The congressman said, I'm going to get you this and this and not worry about the deficit. We'll tax, we'll borrow, we'll print the money. So it was a happy-go-lucky. But things are different this time. We're at a point where our economic system is under attack. Our good jobs have gone overseas. We've become complacent. We are more interested, excuse me, in the redistribution of wealth rather than protecting the environment to produce wealth. Good jobs are overseas. We have an inflationary system where the inflation is undermining your standard of living because prices are going up. Excuse me. Okay. So we have to revamp that all. And you cannot do this without talking about the monetary system. Because once the government backs off or can't tax anymore or borrow anymore or interest rates go up, then they resort to the printing press. And when they do that, it's very, very deceitful and it's wrong because some people benefit and some people suffer. It just happens that if you tax through printing money and then have prices go up, it's the middle class that suffers the most. The middle class shrinks when you do that, and our middle class is shrinking. Where we at one time had the largest middle class in the history of the world and the richest middle class in the history of the world, now the middle class is shrinking and losing the jobs and losing the prosperity. People on fixed incomes are suffering to a great deal because their incomes are fixed but prices are going up. The government tells us, oh, there's no real inflation, it's only 1 or 2%. Most people know there's a lot more. If you measure inflation with the old method, it's about 9%. If you measure unemployment by the old method, it's really scary. The way they did in the Depression, it's 22%. So they're trying to convince you that all this problem is behind this. Unemployment rates went up to 9, now they're 8%, and there's no inflation. But one thing is they're not, this go around, they're not deceiving the people. And I think that is the reason we're receiving so much support, because of the willingness to put it out on the table and say the problem is that government spends too much money. And we should work on this effort to reinstill into our society that the prosperity, when people work and have a right to keep what they earn and they have an incentive, they ought to have a right to keep it and spend the money and not have the government spend the money. Another thing that we have to fix if we expect that and get back to the basics is have a better understanding about liberty. The founders understood it, and they understood that individual liberty, your right to your life and your religious values and your personal liberties, are the same as your right to spend your own money, economic liberty. But people don't generally see this as one thing. They think they're two separate things. But our rights come to us in a natural way. Our rights come to us not from our government, but our right to our life and right to our liberty comes from our Creator. Sound. But unfortunately, if you follow through the extension, and this is something we have not done, is that the extension of that is you should have the right to the fruits of your labor. Now, if you carry that to a logical end, that means we shouldn't have an income tax. Amen. Which I think would be a good idea. But to achieve this, we have to understand the nature of liberty, but we also have to understand the role of government. So the founders understood it, and they didn't like what the king was doing. They didn't like the king taxing them to fight wars, and the king made the decisions. We have to decide, do we want the welfare state? Does the welfare state work? It doesn't work. You know, the welfare state promoted the housing programs. First, print up the money, pass out the money, pass it out through the banks and the Fannie Mae's and the Freddie Mac's and the builders, and everybody's going to end up with a house. Well, the people who received that money first in the mortgage companies and other things, they made a lot of money. Then they went to speculating in derivatives. It was gambling. And then we were told, oh, this is terrible. There's the bubble has burst. We have to save it or there'll be a depression. And in a way, they were right. There would have been a depression for those people who should have gone bankrupt. They should have had the depression. But the Federal Reserve, by putting more money and the Congress spending more of your money, they went and bailed these people out. Middle class got smaller and poorer. Many people lost their jobs and they lost their houses. So the desire to help people get houses for free and have government programs and dictate how you make these loans actually backfired. It does it in education too. You say everybody should have a college education, so the government gets involved. They make an easy credit, give it to the students, and they go out and everybody gets in college, and what do they end up with? Most likely a poor education. They end up with a huge debt, and then we mess up the economy and they can't get jobs, even if they want to go out and pay for it. So just these good intentions generally don't work. They don't work any better in medical care. Everybody wants good medical care, but the question we have to ask, can services be delivered by the marketplace, or do we want the post office delivering them to us? And the government isn't capable of competing and doing this and providing a service. That doesn't mean they always fail, but overall, if you point out 10% are benefiting, the 90% don't, and then it comes to an end. And this would come to an end in medical care, too, because we don't have the funds there. So that's why we're at a roadblock, and we have to make a decision. We're up against a wall on this debt. In Washington, they are not willing to talk about cutting anything. And they talk, but they're not serious. The $1 trillion they're talking about, in contrast to mine in 1 year, which is a real cut, they're talking about $1 trillion over 10 years of proposed increases. So there's zero, and they don't even want to start at the 2013, and they can't even get the bills passed in the House right now to go home on vacation or Christmas break because they can't agree, and there are no cuts. But we will have to make a decision. I think that we had a good taste of liberty and freedom and prosperity. We don't have to invent anything new. We just have to restore our confidence in how freedom works and how the marketplace works. We have to really have our confidence restored in America. We don't have to have confidence restored in social engineering and government programs, because I think the 20th century, the extreme of that was proven to be wrong, and that, of course, was the communist system and the fascist system. They totally failed. But our system, which is supposed to be a little bit more friendly, is very much the same way. It will fail, and it is failing. Matter of fact, under these conditions, where we have perpetual enemies to justify militarism, they have to continue to have enemies every place. So now the whole world is a stage for the war against terrorism. Any country, any place, will go get them, and we can bomb and kill and even assassinate American citizens. That's an established problem. That was announced last February. But what about this new National Defense Authorization Act? That bill is bad. You thought the Patriot Act might have been bad? Well, this is much worse. This gives the authority to the military to arrest an American citizen who may be associated with a group that may have done something wrong. And they bragged on the Senate floor that if you happen to be arrested because you were on the wrong website, or if you talked to the wrong people or donated to the wrong group, and you were associated with this group, if you're picked up, the senator on the Senate floor said, don't come to us and ask us for a lawyer, you're not going to get one. This is on the Senate floor. This is very serious. So this whole idea of these perpetual wars overseas. Now, one thing, how could we stop these? Old-fashioned way. Don't fight a war unless it's declared by the Congress and the people and endorse it. So we have the problem of the foreign policy that I think it makes us more endangered. We have the economic problems that we face here at home because we are bankrupt. But we also have this threat on our personal liberties. And the Constitution is very clear, the oath that we take, and it says we will defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Right now, I personally am more fearful of the loss of our liberties by our own government than I am of a foreign country invading us and taking us over. Amen. So that's not going to happen. This is one place where we have done quite well because we have built up against the Soviets. So we are capable, but now we have overbuilt. We have more weapons than everybody else put together, and we never quit building weapons. And we're the biggest arms manufacturer. And everybody, every time you see that, the money leaves your pockets one way or the other, through it's the inflation or the taxes or the borrowing. So it's always a high price to pay. But right now, something big is going on, and there will be big decisions. If there are no decisions to change what's happening in Washington, that's a big decision, because we will continue to march on. We will have a poorer national defense. Our deficit will get worse, and we're going to end up with an economic crisis much worse, with runaway inflation, because you just can't keep printing money. So all the promises are being kept today, because the world still takes our dollars. The dollar still works, but there's no logical reason for that. It's just because there's no other currency out there. But what happens when the prices go up and people think that the only money is gold and silver? Then there will be major problems, because the government will come down harder in saying, oh, you people are doing this and you're causing the crisis, and you're the ones at fault. So this is something that has to be done. This election is rather important. Matter of fact, this election in Iowa is significant, because it has much more significance than, say, in a couple of months or 3 months from now, California is probably going to have a primary. But who's going to pay any attention? Everybody pays attention here. That's why one vote here is so valuable and can send a powerful message. And there are other candidates, and they talk a different language than I do. I don't see them challenging the status quo on foreign policy and monetary policy, spending policies, budgetary policies, personal liberty policies, the Constitution. So this is a time that we have a chance to send a strong message, because this is the message that can reverse things. We don't have to invent anything new. We're just taking what we were given, and we've allowed to slip away from us, and say, freedom can work and does work, but we have to have it, and we have to protect it. So therefore, we have to have leaders who understand this and believe that the logic is that people will take care of themselves. If the assumption that the other side makes is, if you had freedom to keep everything you earn and take care of yourself, you won't do it. But that is not true, because I think people will. But the other side isn't true, because the government has proven to us they can't take care of us either. So that is the reason that a major decision has to be made. Freedom is something that is rather new. It hasn't been around during most of the history of mankind, because for the 6,000 years of recorded history, most of it has been run by dictators. And we have a lot of dictators still in the world. We have drifted in that direction now, because we see our government becoming more dictatorial, telling us everything we can do, our privacy is gone. So.